Join us in a world where you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Sit back as we discuss hard-won lessons from the best and brightest of personal defense and competition shooting industry has to offer. Let us help you help yourself, no matter where you are in your personal path. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. Now here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at BallisticRadio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other things, class announcements, stuff like that, at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. So, you know something cool, Joe?
And I meant to. What's so cool?
I meant to bring it up last show, but like I actually scheduled, not only scheduled, but sold tickets to my first international class.
Wow. Good job.
I'm going worldwide. I mean, it's Canada, but that's like.
Well, that's okay. Do their heads flop up and down when they talk?
Wow. Kind of. I don't know. I haven't been up there yet. I'll let you know.
Let me know.
I will report back. Man, you just heard class attendance in Canada for me. Hey, I just want to let you know that my producers, unwarranted and hurtful remarks towards the Canadian peoples is completely, completely not supported by me. And I don't agree with it.
Run a disclaimer at the end.
Yeah, something like that. Hey, guess what?
What is that?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. And hey, they like Canadians too. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. Remember, unless you're on fire or drowning or something else, you can never really have too much ammo. A little pop-up, like, popped up on my screen as I was reading that ad. Just like a little reminder for a calendar something or whatever. And it completely derailed me. And I hate that that's all it took.
Like just, scroll behind you, too.
Yeah. Is there? Anyway, joining us, Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant. Brian, how's it going, man?
I'm doing great, and I also like Canadians, unlike Joe.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what they did to him.
Wait a minute, I didn't say I didn't like Canadians.
Well, I mean, it was kind of a disparaging remark, I don't know. Insensitive Americans, but, so I've actually, anyway, I was going to.
Moving on.
Well, no, I was actually going to be like, hey, I have a Canadian friend, and then I'm like, ooh, that's we're starting to play into some stereotypes here. Hey, I'm a shut up now. Who are you and what do you do, Brian?
My name is Brian Hill. I run The Complete Combatant, and I'm pretty hard to pigeonhole as far as what I do. I do a lot of things. Since I was a child, I had a passion to understand everything martial. I read every magazine, watched every martial arts movie, earned money to pay for lessons, and trained twice a day. Ellen Winter, in her book, called it her child prodigy's a rage to master. And I'm not saying I'm prodigy, but I've had that particular focus in my life that I have a rage to master whatever I want to get involved with. So I've spent nearly 40 years of training trying to understand every nuisance of martial arts. I just did the math recently. I've got over 100,000 hours in my chosen profession. I've been teaching since I was 17 years old as a competitor, as a coach. I've done submission grappling, striking, mixed martial arts. I've taught traditional weapons. I'm a nationally certified strength and conditioning coach. I'm a certified advanced range master instructor. I teach precision rifle. I'm a pistol instructor. I'm a competitive shooter. I do proactive mindset classes as an introductory course, and it's also been accepted as a realtor course in Georgia for CE credits. I do force on force, which is my force readiness class. We just got our OC instructors class together. I've done expert criminal witness work, presenter at National Tactical Conference, and pretty much my days are filled with conditioning, shooting, grappling, and striking. And my only true regret is that I don't have enough time, and it's running out, and I wish I had more time to train every day.
Well, I feel inadequate, Brian. I just want to say that. No, Well, so not only that, but so it's funny. We're going to be taking the Force Science Institute Force Analyst class together in October as well.
Yes.
Which was not on purpose, but I'm actually super stoked to be going there with someone that is also not a cop, whom I actually know relatively well, which is kind of, because whenever you go somewhere, especially as a private citizen on the instructor side that's mostly law enforcement, there's always kind of like that sort of head tilt, eyebrow raise, like, who the hell are you? You know, so it'll be good to know someone there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I am too. I'm actually really excited about that class. I guess the thing that I would like to talk about first, I'll tell you what I want to talk about, and then I'll tell you why I want to talk about it. I'd kind of like to get your tau of instructing. Like, what is the things that Brian Hill thinks are most important when you are beginning to impart knowledge to other human beings, and, you know, specifically with a personal protection context, I guess, since that's the focus of the show. But the reason why I ask is because I have heard now from several people whom shall remain nameless, but I respect their opinion quite a bit because they've seen quite a bit of things, that have said that you're maybe the best instructor they've ever seen. Now, caveat here, I've not taken your coursework. I'd really like to take your coursework, but these are people whom I will take at face value when they say something like that, because praise of that nature is not generally forthcoming from either of them, and it really got my attention. So this is me subtly stamping my foot to anyone listening that should probably go take a class from you, but that's kind of why I'm asking. So what's important to you when you're teaching someone something?
Well, I'm deeply honored by that praise. You know, it's been different for me. I've actually spent my whole life in the private sector teaching. So if what I teach doesn't work, I get fired. I don't get paid. You've realized that this is kind of how it is for an instructor. And every day is like that for me. So I've developed an ability to teach people and human performance instead of skills. A lot of people come into the teaching profession as skillful participants. Either they're a competitor, or they're in law enforcement, or they're in the military. And while that is a great asset, it doesn't necessarily make you a teacher. The ability to impart knowledge is several things that we have to do very well. We have to be a great communicator. And that means we have to communicate in a way that the other person understands, that they have a grasp of what we're saying. Not the way we like to communicate, not the specialized language that we've developed inside our own skill, but we actually have to get kind of Yoda-esque and get behind the controls and see what they're seeing and be able to talk to them. As a great teacher, we also need to be a leader. We have to set the precedent. We need to be the person who can perform the skills well, the person who can show patience and resilience under pressure. We need to understand that people are complex when they compete or when they perform, and that there are several different levels that we're working with. We're training their subconscious or their unconscious to do a repetitive skill remotely. We're training the conscious level of the mind to also visualize each activity and give a clear directional skills to the set in mind of what you want to do, which requires serial focus. We have to move from one focus to the next. And then we have to develop their self-image. The self-image tells us who you are as a performer, as a shooter. Who are you? What is your self-image? And that is what allows you to perform under great stress. So it's a development process of several categories. And we have to learn as instructors to not only teach, not only lead, but to deeply understand the person that we're working with and make a deep connection as a team, not as the leader alone, but as a teamwork. And that's how I've always gone about teaching and working with people and trying to be as precise as I can and help them achieve their goals.
So let me ask you this. let me just ask you this, and then I'll tell you why I ask. Would you say that the number one skill that an instructor or teacher, whichever one you want to use, should possess is empathy?
I think it's incredibly important. I think that without that, you're at a distance from the person you're working with, and it doesn't allow you to make corrections. You know, a lot of times we see very, you know, it's like the pie chart of shooting. It's, you know, if your bullet goes here, you're doing this wrong, which is not necessarily true. People are much more complex than that.
Right.
And if I can't put myself in their shoes and I can't see what they're seeing and connect with them and have an open communication that allows them to express, you know, a vulnerability at the time where they don't feel particularly strong, they're learning a new skill, then it's very difficult to help anybody grow. And, you know, a lot of people believe that, they're fixed. They've only have a certain amount of skill or they can only be something. And what we're really preaching is a growth mindset. And if you don't have empathy for that and you don't understand how difficult it is to come to a class and to make yourself vulnerable to an instructor and what I like to say, submit to the discipline of learning, it's very difficult to connect to human beings in a meaningful way. You may be able to run a line. You may be able to teach them a drill, but you may not really connect to them that allows them to grow.
Yeah. So let's stick a pin right in that because we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9L, the 5-inch version, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity. Hey, 15 and 18-round flavors now, as well as reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant, and I guess the question before the break that I asked was, and I hate to say, is this the most important skill an instructor must have? Because frankly, there are so many that are probably neck and neck with each other. Trying to narrow it down to one is a fool's errand, probably. But I was talking about empathy and you know, your thoughts on whether or not that was important. And you said something in there that I kind of want to touch on, is there are people that are able to run a line, there are people that are able to teach a drill, but they're not necessarily they're not necessarily teaching individuals at that point. They're teaching formulas, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, some people can connect with people and get them to grow. And we've all been in that class where a guy just gets you and you suddenly feel a bit stronger or a bit more willing to do the work. And then sometimes we've just been in a class where you're basically shooting drills and then you may get an attaboy or, you know, what happened to that little guy comment, but there's not a lot of feedback. You know, true instruction relies on failure and feedback. And if we're going to allow people to have some sort of level of failure in shooting class, we're going to need to be there to offer not only constructive criticism, but, you know, empathy, strength, and self-image building at the same time to make them a better shooter.
Well, and you mentioned something, and this is this is of particular interest to me, and specifically in the coursework that I teach the most of these days, but the importance of failure and the importance of creating an environment where, one, failure is expected, two, it's encouraged, and three, it's you don't feel bad once it happens, like, and how important that is for growth. Do you mind talking about that a little bit as far as, one, I guess your thoughts on that, and two, if you think it's important, and if so, why?
Yeah, in the failure feedback loop, you know, the biggest thing we have to teach is an emotional correction system. So if we can get rid of the emotion, most people, when they make a failure, their immediate reaction is to get angry at themselves or to get angry at the person that caused it. And as Miyamoto Musashi said, if it serves no purpose, you need to get rid of it. And that anger, that denial serves no purpose in it. And it actually hampers learning, because it takes time out from the process and it takes away from the message of the feedback you just got. If you missed a shot or you missed a drill, you missed it for a reason. And the emotion is what we have to separate from it. We have to actually see what happened and allow the person to visualize the correction at that point. We're teaching modification of effort each time that they shoot. And some people believe that if they get stern with somebody and tell them to shoot harder, that they'll instantly get a correction. But what we're really seeing is what's called regression to the mean. Whatever your average level of skill is, you're most likely to hit that each time. So if I yell at you, it's likely that you'll go back to your average level of skill. And then some people don't like the praise part of it because they feel like the person performs poorly after that. But as a shooter, as an instructor, we have to look at what is the complete package here over a day of shooting. How much improvement have we made? And it's going to be very small modifications. We're going to try to get rid of the correction with emotion and go to an emotionless style of correction, and it'll modify the effort, and we'll see a big improvement in it. It's a very difficult task, actually, because you know, a lot of adults simply aren't in the position to be a student anymore, or they have a lifetime of, like I like to call it, you know, yelling at themselves in their own head, and they can't get out of their own way instead of letting themselves perform in an environment and let themselves have a great performance instead of yelling at themselves while they do it. So it is incredibly important that as instructors, we derail that system and improve them through their failure, because that's the only way we know what we're doing. If we can't measure it, we can't improve it. And measuring requires some failure sometimes, that, hey, you didn't do what you're supposed to right there, so let's improve it. And you'll see a big difference over a day. I know you have. I've heard a lot of great things about your class, where they're doing so many things by the end of the day much better than they were, because you spent the time with them and you cared about their improvement. And your only goal was, how can we make this a better practice for you in the future?
Well, one, thank you. Two, what I have noticed is that, let me think about what I want to say here. The thing that I have noticed is that, you know, so if I take someone that I would consider to be, you know, my idea of an intermediate level shooter, all right, and quite a few of them, and this would be your average training junkie. Okay, I would consider to be an intermediate level shooter. Maybe 50% of them, when something doesn't go well, is, and I'm using the term well, and I don't even like putting it that way, but it's a word that people will understand. Here, when they get an unexpected result, so a miss, we'll just call it a miss. Maybe 50% of them can tell me why they missed. And frankly, that number might be high. Quite a few of them will just be like, I don't know, I'm mad. And it's like, well, that doesn't help. And you know, as you said, giving people the tools to, one, be like, oh, here's why this happened, and two, not have too much of an emotional connection to it. That allows for massive leaps forward later on in their own practice, if they practice, which, you know, again, is an if. But it's kind of interesting as far as, you know, the traditional training model is based almost purely on negative reinforcement, don't you think?
No, absolutely.
And, you know, have you seen any issues with that, or would you like to talk about some of the issues attendant with that?
No, a lot of our philosophy of training in the firearms is much like martial arts used to be 50 years ago. When I first got involved, it's very militaristic in its nature. It's very good for teaching large groups of people a small amount of skill in a short period of time. So if I needed to send a guy to the front lines, I need him to run a rifle or a pistol, whatever his chosen weapon was, fairly well and quickly. But that's not necessarily the way that we build human performance. That's the way that we built people in the military and law enforcement to get through a basic set of skills. I was a reserve deputy with Fulton County, which is Atlanta's largest county and where Atlanta resides. And I've seen law enforcement qualifications firsthand, and it was just to get the person through the skill. It wasn't necessarily to make them better. And probably on the end run, it's to limit the liability that the sheriff's office would suffer if they did something wrong. And to have that sort of philosophy in our firearms training means that we're just training to the minimal level. What we have to do as instructors is build a structured and deliberate practice system that allows them success in the future. That they trained with us is good, but we're setting them up for success in the future because we're going to teach them how to practice. We're going to teach them how to deal with failure. We're going to give them a definition of success and what they're doing. We're going to make it interactive. We're going to teach them what maximal effort feels like. We're going to give them well-defined goals. We're going to give them our full attention, and they're going to give their work the full attention. And then we're going to build this mental model, a representation of skill that allows us to interface with that firearm as if it was our own hand. So, I think that a lot of times we get derailed from actual coaching, teaching, instructing by just doing the minimum amount that would allow the person at the lowest common denominator to get by. And that's not what we do, especially not when somebody takes a full weekend and spends as much money as they do to spend time with us. So as instructors, we owe them more. That ought to get me in trouble, huh?
No, I don't think so. You're not saying it. You have yet to say anything that I don't massively agree with. So, you know, but we do have to go to break. So when we get back, we'll talk more about that. Right now, we're talking with Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all of your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the lumens from Surefire at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and need an RMR now? Well, BigTexOutdoors.com has those. Glock accessories? Yes! Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike, everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So we're talking with Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant, I feel like there's at least one dude somewhere that's listening to this going, "Oh, these are a bunch of hippies talking." You know what I mean? But or something like that. And to be clear too, it's not the it seems to me that some people might think this is the everyone gets a trophy approach to firearms instruction. And I don't think it's not what I'm talking about. I don't think it's what you're talking about either, right?
Not at all. I mean, we have to, you know, everything I know you do it. I know I do it. I know all the great instructors do it, is they measure everything they do.
Yeah.
You know, so there's always a metric involved. So, you know, my class, there's a pass or fail qualification at the end that you have to shoot 90% on. You know, so there's no get a trophy. You actually really have to work for this. And, you know, I in my recent class, there was 2 days, I had 8 shooters in class, and 7 of them failed that class, that the first day. But by Sunday, mid-afternoon, everybody had passed it. So, you know, that gave me an idea that we had made improvements and that they had grown as shooters. So, you know, they had to work for it, though. And they went home pretty upset Saturday night with themselves that they didn't shoot as well as they wanted to. But as we like to say, you only bring the skill that you've earned through practice. Your expectations are not what you're going to shoot. It's the skill earned in practice that makes you better.
Well, it seems to me, too, that so for me, if I'm at a class, that's time I'm not with my family. That's time I'm not with my kids. It's time I will never, ever get back. And I don't know how much of it I have. And you sort of alluded to that at the beginning, that you wish you had more time and you're running out of the time you have. So if I'm going to give something to someone or allow someone to give is the wrong word. If I'm going to create a situation where someone can give themselves something, I want it to be something worthwhile. And if it's a thing that anyone can get just by showing up, I would argue it doesn't have any value, right?
Right. You know, it's this is difficult work. You know, you're going to bump up against people's personalities and their interior thought pattern of what they think they are and what they should be and how they should perform. And, you know, this is a shared experience. And what we, to wander off the reservation a little bit, what we really hope to establish with them is the performance mode of training, where they enter more of a flow state. You know, it should have almost an environment of timelessness and effortlessness, and it should be rich in its experience. And it should have the ability to improve us. And it's funny. Sometimes you start your work and you look up at your watch. You know, it's 9 a.m. in the morning and you look at your watch and it's 6 p.m. and you say, where did the time go? How are we done already? And that means that you're both doing the work. You're deep into it. And, you know, that shared time is a resource and it's valuable to us. And it's something that, you know, I'm sure you feel a deep connection to the people you work with afterwards. I know I do. I stay in touch with them. You know, we communicate back and forth. So as true instructors, we're sharing an experience of performance and growth. And, you know, that's what we're working towards always.
I'm gathering my thoughts. So from a student perspective, if someone were, and I'm not saying the person that's like, oh, I want to be, because I've spent a lot of time recently talking about the, someone that's not going to dive too deep into this world, what are just sort of the framework that you need to know to take an active participation in making sure you get home at the end of the day. Spend tons of time on that. If you are the type of person that wants to burn themselves up with just being consumed by diving into this. And I say that, and it might have a negative connotation, but I think you understand what I mean. I suspect you understand what I mean. what would you tell someone?
If you really want to get good at something, you know, it's going to take mindful practice. And it's going to have to be fairly structured, and it's going to have to work on a daily basis. You know, somebody that wants the minimum amount of this really could handle the gun two or three times a week in dry practice for 10 or 15 minutes, work on some fairly simple skills as, you know, being able to run away, being able to make verbal commands, being able to draw the pistol, and seeing their first round hits. If you want to be a competitive shooter, you know, you're going to have to work on movement and transitions, and you're going to have a pretty structured practice. Two sources I'd recommend deeply if you want more structured practice is Steve Anderson's Repetition and Refinement. It's a great structured practice for somebody to start developing metrics, and also Mike Sieglinder's competition handbook is another place to go for it. Two guys that spent a lot of time, both grandmasters, that understand the deep aspects of shooting skills. And for the defensive shooter, while everything doesn't apply, handling the gun is handling the gun, and getting better at that is incredibly important. You know, some days I practice two or three times a day. Some days I practice once. As long as I feel connected to the practice and it's structured and I'm making progress, I continue my practice. If at any time I feel like my mind's begin to wander, then I walk away from that practice, because I just want mindful reps every day. And if it's 10 great mindful reps of my draw practice, then that's what it's going to be. But I think you need to understand what is necessary to handle a firearm. You need to know the four fundamentals deeply. You know, you have to work on grip, trigger, sights, and follow through constantly, and that should be a part of your practice. And then everything else is administrative handling. How do I get the gun out? How do I move to a position? How do I interact with somebody else? And it's really, compared to teaching somebody jiu-jitsu, this is a pretty simple aspect if they'll spend a little bit of time each day. And it's interesting to listen to some of the top competitors, how little time they actually spend in practice now. You know, I started out with 2 hours a day, and I'm down to about 30 minutes a day, because right. You build a basic level, you know, and then you don't have to practice continually, but you do practice better and more deliberately.
I have some interesting thoughts on that that I don't know that I'm ready to share on the show, but I think it would just be, wow, I am like the worst kind of tease right now. You and I will talk about it at some point, I'm sure. But I wonder if, as you become more developed inside of anything, what you're really developing is the ability to understand what you need when you need it. I know that sounds weird, but you kind of, does that kind of make sense? Maybe a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Can you say something intelligent based off of that little nudge? Because that'd be great. Because I'm out. I don't have anything else.
Well, you know, like I alluded to before, we're about human performance. So we're really just training ourselves, our nervous system, our interior model of how we interact with something. And eventually, if you understand that, you know, it used to be the 1 second draw was an impossibility for people, that it's never going to happen. But as soon as somebody broke that, everybody could start to do it. And now, quite frankly, you know, if you go to a Jedi class or somebody who works on that sort of skill, he can get you there in about 30 minutes, pretty close to a 1 second draw, because he'll teach you what's important. What is efficiency and what does it mean? How do you move well? How do you relax during this? And what true speed of application looks like? So then the person can go home and say, well, that was a good one. That wasn't a good one. That was a good one. And they can grow from that, and they understand how to actually improve themselves, because that's what we're teaching, is here's the parameters of learning. And once you understand that these are the things that give you that, you practice, and then you come to your coach, and your coach becomes the second set of eyes for you and watches you and sees something maybe that you're missing, and then you go back and do the same thing over and over. And firearms is pretty one of the strange things where you only kind of, some people only deal once, you know, they only get looked at once in their entire life. My competitive athletes at my mixed martial arts school, if I only looked at them once, they would never win a fight again.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's continuing. We got to make the skills. We've got to make the bumps back and forth. And it's a teamwork process. And especially with the shooter themselves, they got to know what they're doing, what they're good at, and what they're weak at.
Right. We got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by LuckyGunner.com and Federal Premium Ammunition. They paid for this, so you don't have to. We're talking with Brian Hill from The Complete Combatant about, I don't know, instructorship versus... studentship, or, you know, whatever. We're talking about stuff and things. Outlines. We don't need any outlines. So the
okay, Shelly.
Yes, she's probably listening to your end of this in the other room, just going, "What are they talking about?" So
she's used to this.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yeah.
You know, actually, here's something I'm really curious to talk about. What is a proper way to sit on a couch when you're invited over to someone's house?
Probably not with your legs draped over the guest next to you. You should occupy your own space.
I occupy all the space.
You did.
Wide stance? What's that? Sorry, inside joke. Apparently, I don't know how to stand on an elevator, and I certainly don't know how to sit on a couch. But no, in all seriousness, going back to the actual topic of the show, if there is a topic, you mentioned something that's kind of interesting, and it sort of highlights not the futility of what we do, but something that I find interesting, at least. I know Claude and I have discussed this in the past. The seriousness with which the industry takes itself as far as the requisite skills to successfully defend yourself with a gun. Now, you brought up some students only ever get looked at once, and then they will go out and win a gunfight against, you know, someone else trying to kill them. There are some people that are never even students at all and go and win a gunfight. They just happen to suck less than the other guy sucks. And then to contrast that to the MMA example, you said if you only looked at your MMA students once, they'd never win a fight anywhere. And that sort of highlights the difference between, you know, competitive sports where you're competing against another skilled athlete that's at or above your level versus maybe real-world application of skill. And the reason why I bring all of that up, do you think that sometimes as an industry we focus on the wrong skills if we're only going to get someone once?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that was a meandering question, but do you kind of see where I went with it?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you can't spend time with Claude Warner and not come to some conclusions that we may be wasting a bunch of time on things. His data points to very clearly that, you know, if you can get to your firearm and not make a negative outcome out of it, identify your target and be the first person to make accurate hits, you can win the fight. And the gun and the caliber and the level of training don't matter as much as we all want to make it out to. The problem is that, you know, we all want to get more specialized in our skills. So you've seen this in martial arts. A skill becomes so specialized that it only has advantages inside of its own style. And that's, we have to remember that as the instructor, this may be the only time I ever get a chance with them, we have to provide the general information and allow them to handle a firearm safely, that'll allow them to understand what it feels like to perform under pressure and to do the few basic skills that they need to better than the other person. And, you know, it's hard not to get super specialized when you get involved in this and not to argue about gear and techniques and skill. But frankly, it's more important to be physically fit and have a positive decisional tree of what you're going to do, and to carry some sort of weapon with you and be able to access it when you're available, because that's the skills that we need to teach people. And they're not as sexy as some of the other skills, you know, it's harder. And then how do you make your marquee when you're like, you know, I just teach basic skills, even though that's the most important thing.
Well, and that's kind of, you know, I had this conversation with Michael Grasso at one point or another, but when he was with LAPD, the most experienced, most advanced instructors were the ones dealing with the basic students. And at least that's how I remember the conversation between him and I. And if I am misremembering the conversation, then I deeply apologize. I'm extremely fallible, as history shows. But the reason I bring it up is that inside of our industry specifically, a lot of times it's the least developed, least advanced instructors that are teaching the basics. I see the problem there, and I'm not taking anything away from them, but it appears to me that unless you have a pretty complete understanding of the entire picture, what you tend to see is people focusing on what they feel is important based off of very, very limited information. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I still teach entry-level classes to pistol and to martial arts because that's the most important time. That's when you interact with somebody who doesn't understand your vocabulary, doesn't understand the nature of learning or training, and is pretty gosh darn nervous about what they want to do and how they're going to do it. And if you cannot teach that person, your instructorship is not ready yet for prime time. You have got to be able to teach somebody who has no idea, because that's basically what you are, is you're the entry-level instructor. And imagine if we all got the first lesson from a truly competent master of his craft and said, this is what's important, here's your first lesson. Would we create an environment where people wanted to learn more and carry on? And that's something that, as you know, the higher level instructors need to look in the mirror occasionally and say, hey, listen, it would be important for me to interact with newer shooters because I would become a better instructor and we would create a better atmosphere of learning and maybe a better group of instructors coming up.
Well, and that, yeah, that would be very cool.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting too. So something that I have very much enjoyed lately is going to what are basic level classes, essentially introductory level classes. And that's kind of where I like to, you know, given my druthers right now, if I could go and take anyone's shooting classes, I would take everyone's foundational shooting classes. I got to go and take Lee Weems, and it was excellent. I got to go take Paul Howe's at CSAT, and it was an excellent class as well. But it's interesting to see where people who really, really know what they're doing place emphasis and de-emphasis. Because I think what's more interesting in many ways than what people emphasize is what they don't emphasize, especially if you know they know it. I consider Lee a friend, and you know, I know that we have, he's got way more knowledge than I have, but I know that we know some of the same things. So watching what he doesn't bring up is kind of interesting, you know, and that's kind of where the art is in my mind. You know, what does someone need to hear now? What do they not need to hear now? What do you think about that?
You know, it's funny how our views change and what we want to see from other instructors. You know, when we first start, we want the guy that's been on the pointy end of the spear and how cool it is and take his classes and pass it. And the longer time you spend in this, the more you want to see is how somebody starts somebody else on the path, what they teach, what they emphasize. And you don't care so much about the actual skill sets itself, but how do they present the information? How did they make corrections with somebody? How did they emphasize the things that are really important? That's when you've really transferred to caring more about the performance of the people you teach than your own performance. Because I think initially we all start out in a pretty selfish place. We want to be the best shooter. We want to show everybody how good we are. We want accolades from shooting, you know. But as you journey through coaching and instructorship, that changes and you take great joy out of other people's progress. You know, just like your celebration at the match with Rick, that was outside of yourself. That was purely unselfish and just great joy of watching somebody that you helped perform at a greater level than he ever thought was possible. And you got to share in that moment. And that's the passion that drives you as an instructor. That's what makes me be able to get every day and go to the gym and teach the same thing I've been teaching for 40 years with a renewed vigor and passion each time.
Yeah. Man, there's a lot of things that I would like to, say to that, but we're coming up on the end of the show.
Wow. That was quick.
Yeah. Right. Hey, everyone knew how to talk. Pretty much one of the greatest experiences of my life, next to my kids being born, was watching Rick win that match. And I know that sounds very weird and that sounds like a very hyperbolic statement, but I'd put it right up there. It's in my top five. And I'll leave it at that because I don't need to say anything more about it. But it's, I hope that every single person that has an interest in instructing gets to experience that and can see what a, frankly, life-altering event it can be for how you view things moving forward. Anyway, if people want to take a class with you, and I cannot wait until I can clear the schedule up to come down because you are at the very tip top of my list of someone that I want to train with.
Thank you.
Well, it is. Hey, you did that. you know, where can people find you? Where can they sign up for classes?
Pretty easy. The website's thecompletecombatant.com. All the scheduling's on there, everything you need, where I'm traveling to, when my classes are available. So, of course, we're on all the other social media too, Facebook, IG, and all that stuff. If you want me personally on Instagram, I'm the Chief Chaos Controller, and we know that Shelly does all the work in this arena, so I'm grateful to have a wife that is apt in the social media department because I spend too much time training and on the mats to do much of that. So please check it out. We'd love to have you. If I can help anybody in any way, I'm always available. So,
well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was an honor and a pleasure to have you, sir.
The pleasure was all mine, and I'm deeply honored to be here and be among the illustrious rogues that you've had on this show.
Well, you know, yeah, it's been a pretty cool 6 or 7 years now. But anyway, hey, definitely go train with Brian. Go check out his website. And hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, please leave those 5-star review on iTunes. Really helps us out. We appreciate it. Also, recall, do not inadvertently neglect to have your domesticated mammalians rendered sterile. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.